Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Washington, D.C. is Jonathan Rush. Jonathan is a principal of DTG Risk and Compliance. He's also an adjunct professor at the Georgetown University Law Center, which is probably the more relevant position for the conversation we're going to have today. Jonathan, thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Thank you very much, Adam.
We're going to talk today, and I'm in an uncomfortable position in a humorous way, is I'm going to be asking you a bunch of questions about questions. You're an advocate of asking questions properly, even teaching law school students how to question witnesses. It's not surprising, then, that you're advocating using a Socratic dialogue for evaluating compliance programs. And while that sounds a bit academic, you know, from an article that you'd written that I read, it's less academic than people think. Can you explain what you mean by a Socratic dialogue?
Sure. Law students and lawyers think of a Socratic dialogue as a specific teaching method in law school that's been around for a long time. But if you kind of peel back the legal label on it, what it really involves is an effort by somebody, Socrates started it off after all, with the idea of asking questions about a particular topic. He dealt with large issues of philosophy, but you can do much more practical things with questioning, where the object was ultimately ask a question, listen to the answer, make sure you follow up with formulating follow-up questions as necessary to make sure that you explore a topic thoroughly and get to the heart of whatever it is you're looking for. And to be clear, this isn't like Socratic dialogues you've seen maybe in movies or TV shows where law professors are trying to humiliate students. What I've advocated in the article and I've talked about elsewhere is simply the idea that you have to think about being systematic, patient, and thorough in asking questions in a compliance context, because increasingly it's going to be that level of detail that regulators or enforcers are expecting people will ask inside a compliance program to make sure that it really works effectively.
Yeah, and let's not forget that a heck of a lot of those regulators and enforcement people are lawyers themselves who are used to that approach. Now, can you give us examples or an example of how it could be applied, the Socratic approach, to one area of a compliance program?
Sure. Let me start by saying that this is particularly relevant for people who are tracking corporate compliance enforcement practices in general. In the most recent document that the Justice Department put out that explains how they evaluate corporate compliance programs, they ask three fundamental questions. First, is a corporation's compliance program well designed? Second, is the program being applied earnestly and in good faith? And third, does the corporation's compliance program work in practice? Moreover, when you look at that document, which is readily available on the justice.gov site, you'll see that there are dozens and dozens of questions that prosecutors are saying they are going to be asking to test whether a corporate compliance program is effective. So in other words, that's one concrete example of how you should expect that if government authorities are asking questions about a compliance program, superficial answers won't do, or general assurances. Here's a simple example. In connection with even that basic idea that everyone's heard about for a long time, tone from the top. Now, the version that you're hearing from regulators or enforcers is action at the top. So it's not enough, in other words, just to say, oh, we put out a nice tone from the top statement that our board of directors approved. So the kinds of questions that you have to delve into if you're going to really be able to demonstrate that your compliance program is meeting all of the expectations of regulators or enforcers has to go into issues as basic as how have our senior leaders by word and action demonstrate that they are serious about giving leadership in the compliance space. So what I've suggested as one example of dealing with that action at the top issue a chief compliance officer might, in order to demonstrate that the program really is effective, I'm going to have to ask senior executives and say, all right, in the last year, what concrete steps have any of you officials taken to demonstrate that we as a company are serious and you as executives are serious about leading compliance? What would we tell them? What examples can we cite? How would we demonstrate that those things actually happened? Who heard those statements? How did we follow up from those things? So to be clear, this is not a situation where you're trying to grill the CEO or CFO or other senior executives. But I think it has to be a case where you say, look, if we want to have a strong and credible case to show that our compliance program is effective, we need to be able to talk in specific terms, not generalities, about what we've actually done. And in fact, you know, if you wanted to think about other questions to put to senior executives, have you ever been in a training session in the last year and walked out because you're, quote, too busy, or you've heard it before? Those kinds of questions, though they're uncomfortable questions for some, may be necessary to underscore the importance of being able to prove to regulators and enforcers that senior executives really are behind the compliance program. They really are doing things to say, this matters to this company, this matters to us, we need to take this seriously.
So now, given the importance of asking the right questions, the question I now have is, what are some of the keys to asking them? I mean, what are ways that you can construct a question most effectively to get the information that you want?
Adam, that itself is a very good question. I think part of this starts, if assuming there's no major misconduct problem you're looking at, and you're simply trying to sort of check out the state of the compliance program, it's certainly helpful if, for example, a chief compliance officer can get some kind of basically buy-in or approval from other senior leadership to say, we're doing this to make sure we're doing the right things in the right ways. Like, we are not here to accuse anybody. We're not here to find fault. We simply need to know, how effectively are we operating? If you have that kind of a general, say, tone from the top, something that indicates the context in which you're doing those questions, then it's much easier, I think, to sit down with somebody and say, look, do you remember that, you know, the CEO said this? You have to reaffirm it. That's what we're trying to do here. We're not trying to pick on you. We're not trying to pick on your program. But we have to ask a fair number of questions in order to make sure that we can tell other people, like our primary regulators, that our program is working, and to be able to demonstrate to them that it is really working. I think if you set the tone in that way, then you can start off with some lower key, more softball questions, just get people talking generally about their experience at the company, what they've tried to do, and then you gradually work in toward more substantive issues. I think one key here is that if you particularly find, if you're doing the questioning and you can sense that there's some shortcomings or, you know, areas where maybe even that person you're talking to is uncomfortable that, you know, they don't have a letter perfect story to tell, you still have to exercise patience and not raise your tone of voice, not sound like you're honing in on specific issues with a view to, you know, potentially identifying major shortcomings. But you do have to do that in practical terms. In other words, you have to keep asking questions. You can keep things conversational, you keep things low key. But as I indicated before, the issue here is one of being patient and thorough. And it also involves listening to the answers that people give you. Now, just like,
well, let me dive
all the admin issues.
Yeah, let me just let me dive in there on the listening skills part, which is, you know, no question is good if you don't listen to the answer to it. What should the questioner be listening for? And as importantly, what should they not be distracted by?
Sure. I would say, first of all, the questioner should have been doing his or her own due diligence. You know, let's say you're talking to somebody in corporate banking, if you're in a financial institution. I think as part of your preparation for the questioning, you should already have done as much gathering of information as you can so you can try to understand as well as you can at the beginning. You know, how big the program is, what are they doing, to the extent you can find out, what are their plans over the next 12 to 18 months, you know, all of this so that you can have a list of prepared topics. I don't say you write down the questions literally, because as I tell law students, you know, the risk is if you just look down at your list and ask a question and then you hear an answer, you may think, okay, the person's answered the question. Well, maybe they haven't. So it's more important that you know that the answer and its content matters, and you listen for that. And if it's not something that completely answers the question, you need to be patient. You need to circle back and say, for example, that was helpful. I'm still unclear about this or that aspect. And go back until you're sure that you've got enough information to be, you know, feel informed about that particular topic. But again, you have to think in terms of within the limits of that person's knowledge. What does that person know, or what should that person know about different aspects of the compliance program? And then be prepared just to make sure you're methodical and go through your list of topics and get the answers you need. And if you're not satisfied, again, you don't have to change your tone. This isn't a courtroom after all. But come back and make sure you're patient and thorough in following up if you sense something is not complete in the answer, to get the rest of the answer that you need.
Now, let's say you don't get the answer that you need, or you know, the information that you need, or the answer that the person gives to your question leads to a desire for more. Follow-up questions are going to be critical there. How do you ensure that you get what you are missing from the first response?
Well, there is that chance that somebody is being reticent about answering for several reasons. You know, maybe it's because a fuller answer might sound like they're pointing the finger at their boss. Gee, I really wish we could do more with our IT programs for monitoring. So if you say, well, why aren't you? Then that gets into maybe more delicate issues of, well, I asked our boss for this, but he said, no, we only have so much money in the budget. Well, everybody has to budget year by year, so that in itself isn't a major impediment to the effectiveness of the program. But you have to be prepared to, again, maintaining a calm tone, reassuring tone, but saying, can you give me a little bit more on that? Can you just give me a little bit more clarity in, you know, what's happened in this area? Especially if you have taken a tone from the outset with that person where they don't feel like they're being interrogated or cross-examined, but you're simply being respectful, thoughtful, but persistent in your questions, you might get to what you need. Now, what may happen is the person still isn't giving anything, so maybe that's a basis where after that interview, you have to say, okay, we need to come back to that, but maybe you do that in part by talking to someone else in the same department. Maybe somebody who's not as directly connected with that sensitive topic, whatever it is, so that you don't just think about, you know, trying to prove everything you need to prove with a single interview. It may be that additional interviews or access to additional documentation can help you to come back to make sure you fill in those gaps if somebody is being reticent to give you everything for which you're asking.
Well, I think you've given us, at least me, everything that I've been asking. So I want to thank you for sharing this insight with us. I also want to thank all of you who took the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.